Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. This episode is from the Momentum Series, resurfacing the most popular episodes from our archives to shine a light on the continued growth of companies in our network. And now, on to the show.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of FinStrat Management. Super excited today. We have with us Nick Mastronardi, co-founder and CEO of Polco. Nick, welcome to the show.
Excited to be here. Thanks for having me. Great to see you.
Likewise, and our pleasure. So with that, we'd love to dive into it with a bit on your background. And so we'd love to hear what inspired you to co-found Polco.
Yeah, well, appreciate you spotlighting founders and these crazy journeys we choose to take. The motivation to me, I don't come from a family of entrepreneurs, family of service members, firemen, Air Force, all of that. But did have a penchant, thanks to some educational opportunities while I was in the Air Force, to get pretty technical into data science and econometrics and that. And so Air Force had a public sector background. It was my roots. I loved that with my data science exposure and grad degrees. Air Force had sent me for a PhD in economics. I joined Amazon's econ and data science. We were doing a lot of pricing and it was really cool. And the data helped empower us to make big, bold bets and pursue them confidently. And I got to see firsthand Amazon do amazing things. And I got this desire to bring those same sort of empowering data practices to the public sector. And so in particular, in two ways, and this was our mission from the beginning, is our mission to today, is we wanted to hear like collective intelligence will bring more thoughtful people into providing input during like a brainstorming stage. And then with that data and every other piece of data that we could find, put that in the hands of key government decision makers. And so bring people together so governments aren't just making decisions in response to the vocal few, and then use data so government organizations can make great data-driven decisions. We took a chance with it, and man, now fast forward to where we are today. And it's been challenging, but it's been exciting. It's been rewarding. It's been a heck of a journey. And yeah, looking forward to discussing more detail with you today.
Great. And so was there a particular moment when you realized that there was a need for your product and service? And it'd be great, too, if you can give us a little bit more color on the specific problems you guys are solving.
Yeah, I think when I was, one of my Air Force assignments was teaching at the Air Force Academy. I was in the econ department, and the President's Council of Economic Advisors in D.C. Is usually a team about 10 academic economists. And sometimes some of them want to go home early for the summer or do whatever, but there was a little bit of a gap. And they called me up and said, Nick, you're a federal economist with a PhD. Do you mind taking a couple months? And probably what should have been a dream job. And I definitely enjoyed it. Great experience, exposure. But at that level, seeing the difficulty of using data to make the important policy decisions we were working on kind of motivated me to want to generate and bring better data sets together so people in important roles, like I was fortunate to be in, could use it better. I think the other, Chris, so that kind of like motivated, affirmed to me the need for governments to have better data. So I had this idea, I was floating around as like, man, I got a great job at Amazon. I was still in the reserves of the Air Force. I young family, good life. And I was like, does anybody want to kind of take this idea and run with it? And finally, a friend of mine was like, Nick, the only person who's going to take it and run with it fully is going to be you. So I called up my boss, who was the senior economist at Amazon. He was the chief economist. I was a senior economist. And he said, we have this program where you can take a couple months and give it a whirl and then come back if it's not working out. And at the end of 3 months, we had three cities and counties as customers. And so I was, I'm going to keep pushing on this. And so, that's kind of how we got started.
Okay. And so looking ahead, what's your long-term vision for the company?
Man, long-run vision on Polco is I feel like I really want Polco to fully grow into two things. I feel like we as a country have just unfortunately grown a little bit complacent and apathetic about civic participation. It's like, it's too hard. I don't know. You know, do I even have a voice? Everything's polarized. I want to kind of reinvigorate a sense of civic agency. And so Polco to be a safe place for you to have a voice in your government rather than just complaining about things. I don't like that. Let's have a place, a venue where people can have privacy, share their input, be heard. So the place for civic participation. And I think the other element, probably the simplest way to describe it is, I feel like the public sector needs a Bloomberg terminal for the public sector. They need some way for them to see, am I making progress on key initiatives? How do I stack up against other cities in my state, in public health, in economic development, all these different areas? That data has existed, but not really accessible. And so it kind of undersells the vision a little bit because AI is such a transformative technology. I think we can go even beyond a Bloomberg terminal suite of dashboards, maybe even like proactive policy recommendations and evaluation. But anyway, to me, long run, where do we go? Yeah, it's both this place for participation, and then it takes that resident satisfaction, quality of life, satisfaction of public services, combines it with every other data set and helps policymakers do cool, bold things. That's where we want to go. We think that I'm still really passionate about the mission I had in the Air Force. And, you know, I like defending from foreign threats, but I also think if we can use our taxpayer dollars better from the inside out, it also helps strengthen our country. And that's what we want to do.
I mean, super appealing initiative. You know, anyone who I think has, you know, cares about their country, thinking about tomorrow would be on board. That said, you know, there's a bridge from starting the company and in executing on a long-term vision. Chief among that is product market fit. So, you know, would love to get your perspective on, you know, in the beginning years of Polco, how did you validate your initial, idea for the business?
Yeah, it's a great question. That is a really hard thing to do. Because as a founder, right, I was a data scientist, I was a tech guy, but in order to make sure you got product market fit, you have to successfully sell. And not just like one or two, you got to sell at least a few times. And selling to a public sector customer, you got to be really deliberate about it. And so we had built this platform. It had some voter file verification, but it was unlike SurveyMonkey, took privacy seriously. So it was really a good fit for the public sector. As I mentioned, we got these three local governments in our first 3 months. And then we were fortunate to partner up with some previous local government. Actually, a gentleman named Pat Cannon used to be the president of the Wisconsin City Managers Association, a longtime city manager. And he kind of had direct access and checked it out with some friends. And we went from like 3 to 12. And it wasn't soon after, we caught the attention of the National League of Cities, and it said, well, this is really a transformative tool. And I think that helped us double again. And we were kind of on a path. Now, I don't say like the whole path's been easy. I mean, there's a million ups and downs in there. But yeah, I think that's what helped us get to product market fit.
Okay. And so, you know, having an analytical background, you and I know the significance of data. So what key metrics, KPIs, did you find were just key for purposes of feedback to guide your decision making?
Yeah, that's a great one. I mean, you obviously want to see your sales of your recurring and high margin products going up. So you're always tracking your ARR. And you know, you want to keep your burn reasonable, but I think the ones to demonstrate, and obviously to be venture investable, you need to have a great market. So TAM and everything like that are important metrics. But on the day-to-day on running the business, to me, one of the best ones to know whether you're warranting continued investment is just your LTV to CAC. It's just, you know, to me that makes me internally feel really justified to continue to invest in the pursuit overall. And so, yeah, that's probably a big one. I know we also respond to what's going on in the market at any given time. And, you know, so prior to 21, everybody was, or in 21, prior to 23, everybody was like, growth is the most important thing. And then after that, it's been growth efficiency. But to me, LTV to CAC has just always been like a good key market metric.
And for the audience's benefit, customer lifetime value over customer acquisition costs, synonymous with return on investment. Do you have a threshold that you'll use when you're looking at initiatives before deciding to pull the trigger on something?
Right now, we're trying to get, you know, pretty, we have a few different products and putting them in different ways, but if all of them can hit like a four or five to one, man, that's just, that's great. That's our target.
Okay. And, you know, we find that, you know, at least at a floor is a three, but we consistently hear, you know, four to six in the conversations that we participate in. So it makes really good sense. And obviously, you know, sometimes it can be hard too. I mean, you have so many choices of where to invest the company's capital to make a decision. And so on the subject capital, I happen to be aware that you have investors on your cap table. Would love to hear, that said, what your experience has been in raising outside funds.
Yeah, so this kind of ties into the last question a little bit. Our fundraising journey has been related kind of to our LTV to CAC in the following way. Like when we first started, those first couple dozen customers we had, that was kind of a pure software play, and it was exciting to see it growing. But there was a company in the space that had been the leading provider of local standardized local government surveys and performance benchmarking analytics across the country. But most of the surveys they had been fielding had been through like analog mailers. And most of their analytics had been on a server in the closet. The name of the company was the National Research Center. Oh. And they said, wow, we think your platform and your attention to rigor and your analytics could be a great fit. What do you think? Even though they were bigger than us in terms of revenue, the fact that we were a software company and scalable made it possible for us to merge, or technically we acquired them with some backing from the state of Wisconsin. So it's kind of an unusual path. And, you know, out of the gate, before we kind of fully SaaSified their operations, because of some of the hard costs, the LTV to CACs weren't as high as we'd wanted. And so that's why we, you know, keep our eye on that and bringing it up. But I think one of the cool things about capital on this journey was that we had just a solid group of angel investor backers. I'm a Notre Dame grad. We had some Irish angels. We had some military veteran investors who wanted to back military veteran angels. I think that's how we connected through the Academy Investor Network, AIN, originally. Hivers and Strivers has been an awesome support of us as well. And then I'm based in Madison in Wisconsin. There's a great group of angels who have supported us too. And so even though we took this kind of unusual path of an early acquisition, and now we've actually done two acquisitions, our angels were really supportive of our progress through this way. And I think it helped, even though GovTech really wasn't hot then. I mean, I'd say it's like super hot now, but it is kind of recognized because it's an important market. The angels were there with us in an unusual market through an unusual strategy. And now it's kind of taken us to a point where we're kind of between a Series A and Series B and more traditional venture. And we're excited for the rest of the journey, but at the same time, extremely grateful for the angels who saw the opportunity and joined us on the non-traditional journey.
And shout out to AIN. Obviously, big, great group, big fans. Yep. And so with that, though, you know, for any CEO, you have to manage investor expectations alongside company's growth. How do you find balancing those two?
It's hard. So because you're really experimenting a lot of new go-to-market motions and market segments and what to attack in the right sequence, and you don't know what's going to deliver, but at the same time, you got to make promises to your board and do your best to hold it up. So I would say, you know, transparency is key. Performance, you know, tracking on the performance metrics are key. You know, I think in the early days, we were really good at this. I think over the last little bit, and honestly, it's something that I was excited about our work together, getting much better at this. But we made this shift where a lot of our infrastructure was really struggling to keep up, because we started selling to states, but the sales motion was very different than our local governments. And we had them in one single funnel, and it was confounding everything. And we needed to break that apart. And we changed our entire ecosystem of analytics and reporting tools. And there was like a year there where we were just really struggling before we got all of our new funnels set up and our funnel metrics and our goals and our tracking on the goals. It was the most disorienting. I'm an Air Force guy, so I mean, I feel like you'd almost be flying and lose positive control. You stall out and where am I? And it's dark and trying to get your bearing on that. And so at that point, it was really tough. I think we are just now, again, thanks to a lot of work you've been doing, some folks on our team, we are starting to kind of really get our bearings. There's the other thing that struggles too, and it's you do something that works, but then you try to add some scaffolding with your team around you to scale it. And you've got some people who are great in one role, but as you grow, they in that role again don't work. And so you kind of hit these like starts and stops. So we've hit a couple of those over the last year. These are things I think a great investor is accustomed to. And so you're like, okay, you reorient that kind of role and you're kind of getting back in it. And so you got to roll with the punches. We do our best, but I think those two things presented some challenges. And so, yeah, just trying to, I don't want to overpaint the rosy picture of a tech entrepreneur. There's some heartaches in there. And I think those are just examples of a couple of the ones that have been, difficult to work through.
And so with that, we're mutually bullish on the role that technology plays, especially with early stage companies. The amount of scale it affords us is material, but there's no substitute for great people behind the work that needs to be done. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on how you think about building and managing great teams.
Man, this is one that I don't know I'm really have like cracked the code and I'm the expert on. Okay. And so I am fortunate to have some great people on our team. But we're doing some key hires right now. And I'm constantly, questioning myself and trying to stress test my assumptions on if I'm, searching for the right things in the right ways. I'm not an HR person by background. I try to read some books. I think my time at Amazon with the bar raisers and some of the questions that we asked really helped. I don't know if I'm the expert there. So I try to, surround myself. My most recent thing is finding people who have been part of great scaling SaaS companies and have hired into those roles seem to just have a knack for identifying things early. And so I'm trying to learn as much as I can from them.
Okay. And I mean, I think it sounds like, said another way, that there's a recognition that surrounding yourself by other amazing people is an asset to the company, and enabling them to bring their expertise only serves to benefit the vision.
Yeah. I feel like, and you got to know your own weaknesses too. Like I think to be a successful entrepreneur in the first place, at least for me, I feel like I'm an optimist. I want to make positive change, positive impact on the world. And I'm also a perfectionist, which like drives me to do well. But I think those two things also make me probably not the best scrutinizing critic of other incoming people. So I've got to recognize those two things help me in one area, but may not help me in the other. So I have to surround myself with right people who we can assess a candidate great together. But yeah.
So, all right, so let's build on that. So a bit unique, veteran founder, your time in the Air Force, I'd say gives you unique leadership experience. That said, when you think of leading the company, any lessons in particular that you've accumulated over the years that have really stuck with you?
Two things stick with me. I think to successfully lead, and this probably holds true for any organization, but certainly like an innovative software tech company, you got to be a great leader. You got to be a great manager. So I'll unpack those just slightly. But I think to be a great manager, man, this is like a resource allocation problem. You have to have your teams in data making claims. Are they making progress? Are they delivering an ROI for the resources that you allocate them? Are you checking up? Are you feeling confident in that? Again, I'm an economist by training. So like that's a resource allocation, portfolio management to my team, to my people. Are they delivering? And I can check in on those things. My take on leadership is, if you just really passionately believe in what you're doing, you can communicate and articulate a vision, and you're willing to tirelessly work on that vision. And next thing you know, you turn around and there's people who just behind you, supporting you. Maybe there's better methods for leadership, but to me, that's a method that I've just been blessed. That's worked for me. It's just something I really love doing. And we've got some great people who every time I turn around, they're just cranking really hard on it with me. And I think the more passionate success I exude, and it just kind of boils over. And so those are my quick takes on leadership and management.
It's been a similar experience. And, I found that leading by example absolutely has a positive impact on culture, but would also be curious to know if there's anything else that you consciously think about doing in order to make sure that this is Polco is a great place for people to want to work.
Yeah. It's funny. I've been trying to, I guess I would also characterize myself as a little raw. And as the team's gotten bigger, I say what I feel. And, but as the team's gotten a little bigger, I've been trying to be a little more cautious about that. And then just recently we were at a big conference and, one of our teammates was like, hey Nick, you kind of went off the cuff recently. It was a little raw, but I really liked it. And so, try to reintroduce that a little bit. I think, live once, you live once and just go after it with everything you got, be genuine, be authentic. I think it helps you internally, but also helps you in the market with your marketing. But yeah, authenticity is key.
I don't know that, that our space has necessarily turned a corner, but 100% agree. You took the words out of my mouth. I mean, being genuine, so endearing. My experience has been that people recognize that. And when they do, the trust factor increases. Because now they know you're being sincere. And I don't know that there's a deficit of that, but I definitely know that people are looking for it, or at least, again, that's been my experience. It's been a great conversation. I'd love to do this for a lot longer, but we need to wrap up. Before we do, one last question. What advice would you give to any other entrepreneurs out there who are thinking about starting their own company?
Yeah, make sure it's something you really are passionate about, because there's going to be tough nights, hungry, tired, who knows where you are, questioning yourself, family questioning what you're doing versus how'd you say that's your other position. And it will, I think, all be worth it if it's something that you genuinely believe is something that makes the world better. So just don't dive into anything. Entrepreneurship is not for the faint of heart. And for you to be successful in a difficult challenge has got to be something that you believe in, probably more than just the dollar bills. And if you follow it that way, then I think the dollars will come along. If you do have that hunch and it is something that you're passionate about and you're in America where these types of things are possible, man, don't be remiss. You've got a gift. And so this is a place where we have the ecosystem and the finance and the teams and the markets that work to support you to do something big and bold. So if those necessary conditions are satisfied, don't miss that opportunity and something that you wish you had done later.
Be bold. I love it. That's great. Nick, if there's anyone out there who wants to get a hold of you, how can they find you?
Yeah, absolutely. Nick Mastronardi at Polco, nick@polco.us. Shameless plug. If you're ever, somebody or you live in a city, county, school district or state, somebody who's looking for great tools to hear from the residents or use data in their decision-making, don't hesitate to let us know. We are excited about where technology is going. We think we've positioned ourselves really well for AI and some of our traction coming together. So probably doing a fundraise, but we're always at nick@polco.us, or you just got great advice for us. I'm always trying to learn and improve so our organization can be the best it can be. Appreciate the opportunity to be here with you, Christian.
Nick, thank you so much for being a guest. This is a great conversation. I appreciate you sharing your insights with our audience.
My pleasure.
Again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of FinTrap Management. Nick Mastronardi, co-founder and CEO of Polco. Thank you. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com/podcast-guest. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast.
And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is at finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.